Hello, welcome back to Rogue Startups. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt. Today, I'm chatting with Wes Bush, the originator and kind of thought leader around product-led growth. Wes had his first book, the Product-Led Growth book, out about 5 years ago. He's got a new one coming out soon. And Wes walked me through, literally step-by-step, through the playbook that they run with all of their consulting clients around how to implement product-led growth within your business. You know, I didn't even kind of realize like the original book and kind of product-led so far was just like, hey, this is a movement, this is a thing, and this is, you know, you should consider this. The new book that's coming out, and it will have come out just the day before this episode goes live, is really, this is how you implement it in your business. So for those of us SaaS founders who are like, oh, PLG, you know, I don't buy into it. You know, I still believe I have to do sales marketing stuff. Like, this is the book, and the very end of this episode is where Wes literally walks me through how we could implement a PLG differentiable and kind of motion and kind of setup within Castos, within my business, to set ourselves up for success over the next few years. And so Wes was super gracious to literally just walk me through that. And there's a lot that we all can take away from the kind of mindset and methodology of how he approaches implementing a PLG motion and setup within a business, even if you're kind of more towards the enterprise level within SaaS. So I truly hope you enjoy this episode. It was great for me to finally meet Wes. We've kind of known each other online for a long time, and he really blew my mind with how relatable and easy it is to set this kind of motion up in your business and set yourself up for success. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Okay, so Wes, I want to start by maybe dispelling a very common like misconception, which is the terms product-led growth or PLG and self-service SaaS are the same things. Like knee-jerk reaction, what do you say to that?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of overlap, but there is like very specific differences between the two. So like product-led growth to me is like where you're using the product to acquire, engage, and monetize users. And so it's like completely product-led in that way when it comes to like the sign-up experience, getting the value, and also like pulling your credit card without talking to anyone. So that's like building truly a product that could sell itself. Where like self-serve is more kind of considered as like, okay, self-serve revenue, like people can do that on their own. And so that's where like that full part of like the acquisition, engagement, monetization part gets like lumped in. It's like, that sounds very self-serve, right?
Yeah.
Now, where it gets a little complicated is to do product-led growth right, at least our belief at product-led is like it's more than a free trial. There's more to it. And so it's also organizational thing. So like it should impact your company level strategy, should impact like the team you build, the capabilities you invest in, as well as like the product data, your growth process, and also like just your understanding of the user. So those are like all the kind of organizational things that I really look into and to support PLG on that level.
Okay. So I want to dive into that, because you kind of piqued my curiosity of like, it will affect your organizational structure. Because like one thing that I think about is like, what is a great kind of SaaS team look like? And so like, I'll just say we're kind of like low seven figures ARR, and we're a team of 8 people right now, but I'm the only marketing person currently. We have like a product person who he kind of like crosses over a bit. Are you kind of saying like, if we wanted to invest in marketing people from here, a fair bet wouldn't necessarily be go hire a marketer who does, you know, fucking SEO or email or something like that, but go hire or maybe move our product person into like product marketing. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
You could, if that's like a current gap in the team where you're like, okay, we're not getting enough signups, people aren't understanding what we're doing, like we've got to have like good product marketing. I guess what I was getting at more so is a lot of people think like PLG, it's just that free trial, freemium model, it's just like a call to action, it's just a marketing thing, or it's just a product thing. And that's like, we analyzed like 324 plus of our clients last year, and we were actually kind of amazed when we looked at the people who went through our programs, we worked with closely. There's like this big group, like 80% senior product execs, 20% were like these founders. And the product executives, like they were just not that successful. Like they didn't really have much success, like launching the PLG motion. If they did, it didn't generate much revenue, and it kind of got siloed. And then the founders, like what they were doing, which was really about implementing as like an organizational wide thing. And so that was actually for us, like the big aha moment, like those 20% of founders generate 80% of the results. But why that was, it all went back to their implementing it as an organization-wide thing. So back to your, like, do we move this person here from demand gen to, like, product marketing? It would come down to your strategy. So, like, how are you going to win? And what does your business need to win? So, like, if it's, you know, a differentiated approach, yeah, okay, sure. Like, investing in product marketing might make a bit more sense. So users will know what's unique about your product in that sense.
Yeah, gotcha. I want to try to differentiate between two other things, which to me is like a marketing channel. And you mentioned, like, how are you going to win in the market? Mm-hmm. And PLG, right? Like it is product-led growth and the product just being amazing and product have like viral loops and things like this, like the marketing channel, or is that independent of marketing channels that you would run kind of next to like a PLG-driven company?
Yeah, great question. So the answer is it could be both, which is the confusing part, right? So,
you're like an accountant. This is great.
Tell me all the options. what do you want to do? So yes, when it comes to PLG, like you could make it a marketing channel, but that's not always a possibility. So I'll give you examples for everybody to kind of think about this. So MixMax is like a email tool. You could use it to like book meetings and all that stuff. And it's really kind of cool what you could do when you share a MixMax inside your Gmail or something like that. And so when you're sharing it to somebody else, like if I send it to you, Craig, you're going to like see it and it's like, oh, it's powered by MixMax. And you might be interested because it's kind of a cool embeddable thing in Gmail. You check it out and then you're like, oh, wow, like that's MixMax. I didn't even know that. I want that too. You sign up. So when I was talking to Olaf, the CEO of that company, he was like, our customer acquisition costs are zero. And he's like, this is fantastic. It just has this viral loop. It just every, you know, user brings in a new user, at least it's got a really high viral coefficient. So that is like viral growth and it's enabled by a product-led growth motion. Now, when we're talking about like, let's say a workforce management tool or like an HR tool, there should be viral growth, but the problem is it's not external. Like it's just internal inside the organization. So those products are a lot harder to grow with that PLG motion. And so that's why I think to your question, which is why I was like, that's actually a really good one. I don't just say that because I know a lot of podcast guests say that is because it is a common misconception that, oh yeah, PLG, it just means it's a marketing channel where it's like, that's the, it depends part is like, it could be if you have that viral coefficient and your product lends itself well to that. But I've seen a lot of companies think that that's the case, go into it. And then they're like trying to manufacture this growth loop that it doesn't work because it doesn't naturally lend itself to like that kind of product.
Yeah. Yeah. So in your mind is PLG and kind of viral coefficients and this like you sharing your tool with someone else who then may, you know, it's the Dropbox or MixMax, you know, Calendly, Canva, whatever type of model. Is that the primary way in which you see PLG working well is when you have this kind of internal to external growth loop going?
I think it helps. Like anything like that, it would just help accelerate your existing growth. And that's what you want. Does it have to be that case? No, like even with Canva, although you could share your graphics and everything else like that, if you search like, hey, how to make a poster, like they're ranking first for that. If you search like how to make a Facebook cover image or something like that, it's like they rank first for that too. And the reason why is because they know through a ton of research, just what are people searching for before they need to design something like that? We just want to be right there. And so I think the ultimate hack here, like for the marketing side, and this is like the lamest hack ever, is just get to know your customers really well. Like we talk a ton about like, hey, who's your ideal user? Pick one. Like don't try and like boil the ocean, pick a bunch of people and then get really clear on like, what's their end game? What are they trying to accomplish? And then you break it down into like these three kind of like gamified levels. And you know, your level one is like everything the beginners struggle with, all that stuff, all those challenges, they can be, you know, covered in your products, but also in your content, in different resources you provide people. And that's where those marketing kind of ways of thinking about it. It's like, okay, yeah, we could use PLG for acquisition. And it's just solving those challenges faster in more creative ways, whether that's with your products or your marketing tools or content.
Yeah. Yeah. So Castos, we're a podcast hosting an analytics platform, and we have, I believe, like a huge responsibility to educate our customers about podcasting before they get started. Correct. 'Cause it's not like, again, we'll use Mixmax, right? It's not like Mixmax, you just sign up and you put the thing in your email and it's done and that's it. Mm-hmm. It's like, fuck, there's like gear and YouTube and audience and recording and editing and how the heck does distribution work? I think we find like a lot of our content is literally around just like educating our market, whether they become our customer or not, like just, you know, hey, this is how to be a good podcaster. And hey, we can help you when you get to this point of needing hosting. And so I think that we look at like, we try to have a fairly strong, like product led or, you know, kind of motion, but also we do have a very strong content arm just because there is so much that needs to happen for our customers to be like ready to engage our product to be successful.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you see that a lot.
No, I want to double take on that and give it another example too, because this is the hardest thing that I think a lot of people underestimate is they think, okay, to get the user to value and eventually upgrade all on their own to have that self-serve motion, then it's like, okay, what do we have to do for that? And they just think about in their head, like all these product things. And that's actually why it often fails. Like you can make your product super easy to use, and you can get all the GTube out, it's easiest to use, but does it get people to the success, to really see value? So like one of our clients is userguiding.com. And so they have like a really easy to use product adoption solution. And so what's fantastic about that, like it's easy on the product side, but let's say you sign up and you don't really know how to do like product adoption well. You don't know how to guide users to value and you don't have a strategy behind that. Well, if you just give them a tool, are they going to do a great job or an okay job? And it's like, it's an okay job. At the end of the day, is it the product's fault? No. But what's missing here is two things. There's the skill gap, which is, are they lacking any skills to do this well? If you think about somebody who just like, they just run professionally, it's like they have different techniques. They have different ways of doing things that make them really good at what they do, make them faster. Then the other thing is knowledge gaps. So is there anything they just don't know that's actually holding them back from accomplishing like that amazing, you know, free to paid conversion rate that they're after? And so that's like, those two things are some of the biggest ones, but it's like if you imagine it like a cake, there's like three layers. There's the like product gap, there's the knowledge gap, then there's the skill gap. And like for your product, for instance, the product gap might be really small. It might be easy to set up and stuff like that, but you're like, you really have a lot in like the knowledge gap side to educate people on. You have a ton on the skill gap, but everybody has a different kind of formula, and it's like a combination code. It's like, oh, we got to spend a lot more time on knowledge stuff and skill stuff than the product stuff in general.
Yeah. Yeah. I think where we see that come to light most often is in kind of medium term churn, right? So we have for our type of product, and we're kind of B to prosumer, amazingly low churn. Like we're really proud of it, but it always happens between like 1 and 3 months. Like that's our biggest cohort. It's not 1 month because people sign up and, oh, I'm going to go do this and this is going to be fucking great. Right. But then they get in and they're like, well, this is really hard. Like, gosh, like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I did 3 episodes and I don't have 10,000 listeners. Like I'm out. And so I think that's what you're talking about. It's like the product, I don't think is, I'll say the problem or the opportunity, right? The product is great. It's, you know, whatever. There's maybe both knowledge and skill gaps for us, which is why we're so into content.
Yeah. And I think like for products like that, it's also just being kind of real with like, okay, it's for like, say the user's end game here is like, okay, they're having this incredible podcast, amazing listeners. They can see like the data and stuff and really know like it's making a big impact. So like, if that's the end game and your product just does, let's say the analytics side of things, then it's like, okay, what else could we do to empower them and support them along this journey so they could do that. And that's where it gets really fun. And whether it's the community, whether it's something else, like beyond the product too, that you could help them with, then it's really how you differentiate too. It's like, we just help people the best and people are trying to copy your product, but you're like, actually, that's not one of our moats. The product is helpful. It's great, but it's these other things that really pull the weight, and your competitors will look at you like, I don't know how to copy this. And it's like, it's because we have a strategy to win.
I love that. I love that. I want to go back to something you said. You talked about kind of the 80-20 of like the folks that you work with. 80% were kind of like product managers and the 20% were founders. Mm-hmm. I want to go within that 20% and talk about who PLG is best for, because I think that's like the thing in everyone's mind is like, are you telling me like I don't have to do marketing and I don't have to learn sales and I can just make a better product and it'll just go magically sell itself? And the answer may be yes. Like I'm a bit skeptical, so we'll have to cross that bridge. But like if folks are listening and they're like, this is awesome, I want to do this, who is that person so they can like self-identify and say, cool, I don't have to do marketing or sales anymore?
Yeah, I would always say, no matter what, if you're in business, you're going to have to do marketing. You're going to have to do sales. You're going to have to figure out your delivery side. So it's just, how do you do that? That I think is the interesting part. So when I say like, who is PLG best for? There's a little disclaimer in my upcoming book. I say at the very beginning, I'm like, if you don't have customers, don't read this. Like, don't worry about PLG yet. Because what you should be thinking about is just, do we have, you know, a meaningful problem we're solving? Do we have traction? Do we have people that actually want to pay us? Like, solve those core problems first. And then once you start having like 20 or maybe 30 customers, then you can start asking yourself the question of, what is the most efficient way to scale this company? Now, if you have, let's say, like a really high annual contract value, like let's say it's above $10,000 per year, you could say, okay, maybe this is going to look more like a sales-led motion or a hybrid motion or something like that, because, you know, we could afford it and people want to talk to us. We've got to provide a lot of value on some of those calls as well. And so you might say, okay, sales-led motion works a lot of sense for like high annual contract value things. Now, if you, out of those 23 customers, they're like, you know what, for podcast analytics, people are kind of like really getting upset if we charge any more than like, you know, a few hundred bucks per month. So what are we going to do for this motion? Like, how could we scale this? We can't afford to like hire someone in sales to just talk to these people with churn and all that stuff. So then it kind of unpacks, okay, maybe it is this product that motion. And one thing I get at least a lot of flack for on the PLG side is like painting this picture that it's one or the other, like it's product led or you're sales led.
Okay, and interesting. Yeah.
When it comes to what is your first go to market motion, my belief is you should pick one and focus in on one and master that one, because each of these are very different beasts and trying to do both is like doing both really not that well. And once you like go beyond a certain point, whether that's 3, 5, 10 mil, where you feel like, okay, we've mastered that, then you could explore like some hybrid options and have like product-led sales or something like that too. So I hope that kind of answers like, when does PLG make more sense? I think the only other like qualifier to kind of think about is, are you solving for simplicity and like standardization, making things accessible, or are you solving for like solving very complex problems? And both of those are very different go-to-market motions. Like product-led companies, they lean more towards standardization, simplification of things, where enterprise company, where they thrive, is solving these complex problems and advanced stuff that only like less than 1% of your market actually struggles with. And so it comes down to what problems do you want to solve?
Yeah. Yeah. In your experience, have you seen, I'll say like sales and marketing driven growth or product led growth, ramp faster or slower? Like, is there a velocity, like a growth velocity difference between the two typically?
Yeah, definitely. When you're looking from like a revenue perspective.
Yeah.
So yeah, for a sales led company, you will typically find they can get much more revenue a lot faster than the product led company. And it's one of the reasons why I'm like, I feel like still to this day, when it comes to starting, like whether it's a product led or a sales led company, the sales led business still has an advantage just in the fact that they can get like higher annual contract values, usually a lot faster than a product led company. Whereas a product led company, I would say it's a lot harder to get started because it's a lot more work, to be honest, to create that kind of like self-serve experience and everything else. But it's a lot easier to scale, and you don't need as many people to scale that business. And so the first few years will feel like, you know, getting to your $1 million in recurring revenue, like that, that takes a while. But once you are at one, it's actually not too hard to get to 3 or 5 and actually keep the same team, which is like the craziest thing. I love always telling people about like user flow. And with, I know Espen, the, one of the founders, and like they were $5 million in recurring revenue with just 3 employees. And I think like people need to hear that because I'm like, it's fantastic.
Yeah. That's good. That's good to hear. I mean, I think a lot of folks who I talk to and companies that I advise, I do a bit of coaching on the side, are always like, you know, kind of what's the surest and quickest path to like predictable revenue. And I do echo what you say, which I think like PLG in my mind, cause we do a bit of it. Like we have some kind of virality within our tool. We have some free tools, which is something we maybe we'll talk about, but I do think that like having a sales or marketing approach that's external to PLG is the way to go at the beginning, because it seems to me like PLG is a lot more to figure out when it works. It's very efficient, but also you do need that kind of cohort of users to spin that flywheel.
Yeah. And I think like the long-term question is like, are you looking more for predictable revenue or effortless revenue? Yeah. And they're different games. Like you can get predictable revenue in both, I'd argue, but the sales-led path is a faster way to get that, at least in the early days. But then if you're trying to get effortless and or recurring revenue, that's really hard like to do any other way than with the product-led motion where people sign up, get to value and upgrade without talking to you.
Yeah. So Wes, you mentioned like something you get a lot of flack for, you know, but you have a very opinionated position in the kind of SaaS market. What is something that you talk about but don't believe in very deeply? Like if you had to kind of take back one thing that you stand on, what would it be around PLG?
I never really thought about that because I'm pretty like, if I keep talking about it, I believe it to a certain degree. So it's like, I think where there's things that like I might say where I'm like, oh yeah, I might like take that back eventually or something like that. It goes back to like when you mentioned like, oh, you're responding to that like an accountant. And I actually think back to like, oh God, am I turning into one of those people? Because there's being a thought leader and then there's being like always correct in every scenario and giving everybody like the if then or that scenarios. And I think as you gain more experience in any field, you start becoming the if this then that, and that's actually more boring to listen to than like, oh, just do that and just do reverse trials. Like that's the best thing ever. And it's like, sure, it might work for a good amount of people, but like let's think about the stage thing. If it's your first motion, like don't try and like merge them together. How about just get one right? So the part I always go back to is like, I just want to be the give people the best advice for the best stage they're at, because it's a world of a difference between like, hey, this is good for 0 to 1 mil, and this is a totally different game for 1 to 10.
Yeah. I appreciate that, because I have, I don't know if it's like a LinkedIn or Twitter post or a book or something, but I've had this thing in my mind for like a long time, which is like, don't believe your heroes. Because I mean, you're a thought leader. I'm a very, very small thought leader. I work with some people that are very big thought leaders, and 100%, like, I don't know everything. You don't know everything. No, you know, Rob Walling doesn't know everything. Heaton Shaw doesn't know everything. And they all, we all give advice that we think is like applicable to 90%+ of people in 90%+ of situations. But there's always this thing where like, you're going to give advice, someone's going to hear it and they're going to run with it and they're going to run their business into the ground. And it's not your fault, right? It's their fault for believing carte blanche in something that someone on the internet says without considering kind of the lens through which you say it and your experiences and the applicability of it to their business. So that's just why I wanted to ask, like, you know, maybe a better way of saying it is like, what is one thing you talk about that you think isn't really applicable to a large number of people? But, and the answer may be the same, but I think that's always helpful to kind of check ourselves with.
Yeah. I think for the, like that part of what I say is I always want people to have like a self-serve motion. And the reason why is because if you do that, you're really bought into it like completely. Now, I found that approach works best, but I'm also like privy to the concept of, okay, if your sales, like, I'm just start small. So I usually don't like start there because I'm like, okay, just like, are you all in or not?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want to work with people that are like all in. So I tend to portray more of those extremes. But what I would say is if you're like a sales company, it's like you could start with like, let's just say expansion and get people to expand through in-product tours or something small and start to get some of those ones under your belt and build up some more of that like credibility that like product-led can support your business. And so, if I was to change anything, I'd probably say, okay, yeah, start smaller, go for some of those quick wins. And the reason I guess I take the other stance of like, just go full hog is because I do actually want to scare some of the CEOs away that don't fully get it. And they're just like, oh, okay. Like this is a big pivot kind of thing. And so what we find works best is like taking more of that polarizing approach, like just go full hog and go all in from acquisition, engagement, monetization, because it attracts people that are already at that stage that are much better. But yeah, that could change over the years too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you think? So the skeptics out there, right? Whether it's a founder or a CEO or something, and you go, or their head of product comes and says, hey, we're going to do this PLG thing. And they go, you're crazy. We're, you know, Salesforce, where we can't do that. We're a sales led organization. We can't pivot. Why do you think they're saying that? Like, what is it they're scared of?
I mean, people just in general are usually scared of change. And so there's certain responsibilities, certain budget and stuff they all have access to because of the current motion and it's set up for them. And if they're okay with that, then they might like it. Now there's always the, in any of these change management kind of scenarios, there's always another side of the story where they're like, oh yeah, I'm the one leading the PLG initiative or something like that. Like I'm going to get, you know, a good chunk of the budget. I'm going to get a good chunk of like the team and stuff. And so it's this fighting battle inside a company. And there's this book I love reading since I'm a big history buff. It's called Why Nations Fail. And in it, there's this like these two words I always keep going back to when it comes to like what you need to do for a company to live long term. And it's, you must have creative destruction. And there's the creation of something new, but there also has to be the destruction of something old. And it's that friction that is actually very healthy when it comes to a company. And so why do people fear it is because there is something creative being born and something also being destroyed or underinvested in or something else like that. And so I don't think it's anything more than that. I think it's just being okay as a leader, being able to thrive in that creative destruction and being able to realign your goals, your support with where that new creativity is going and hopefully not getting caught on the side of, oh yeah, we're just going to destroy your team.
Yeah. More or less. Yeah. Right. I want to pivot from kind of talking about PLG to talking about you in the business. And you mentioned working with clients. Like, what does that mean? Like, what does your business look like and who do you work with and how do you help them?
Yeah. So our business is pretty simple. We have like a product-led implementation program. So people will like buy our new book, the product-led playbook. And then that book will go through like, hey, here's our overall approach to how do we believe like the best way is to implement and scale up your product-led organization. So there's like 9 core components to it. The product-led implementer will just work with them to implement each of those. So for instance, like they'll have a workshop and go through, build out their strategy. They'll have more workshops, go through, identify who their ideal users is. The implementer can also do like the user research, understand exactly who that ideal user is. And then we'll craft based on those researches, like what is the best free model for them? What does that look like? And so it's kind of like a tactical guide that you can hire to just go through and accelerate your PLG motion. And we found that works best because it's actually back to your other question about the change management side. That is the most underrated value we provide. There's the process and everything's simple, but what we pride ourselves on is we bring everybody along for the journey to go through that. And that's how you get buy-in a lot faster.
It's funny. I have a 12 and 13 year old at home. And I always say, like, it's my best sales effort is them, like managing them. What strikes me about this is you talk about PLG and are like the PLG guy, but you effectively run a sales organization, right? But you're just selling internally to these companies. You have the champion of PLG that comes to you and they need help shepherding this change management, which is really a sales job, through the organization.
I don't know if it would be sales or like facilitation.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they have to sell it internally and you're probably helping them with that.
Totally.
Yeah. It's not a slight. I think it's really cool. Like I think the most powerful founders and companies I see are the ones that can cross these two things over and do both, like you're saying. So I think it's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. You mentioned the book. I know you wrote Product-Led Growth, like the first book,
Five years ago? Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. And so Product-Led Playbook is coming out when?
This is coming out October 8th.
Oh, right on. Cool. So that will come out the day before this episode goes live. This will go up live on the 9th. So sweet. Awesome. So kind of like how is this book different from the original book and kind of who is it for or not for?
Yeah. So I'll go back to what you said about like, okay, what we're really doing is selling people on some things, because this analogy will fill it in. So what I identified is that there's actually three sales we need to make before we even get a customer. And this actually applies to like hopefully most of you listeners. If you find yourself in a non-commoditized kind of industry, so something you're like creating a new blue ocean as an example. So for the first sale for us was always like, are people bought into PLG? Do they get it? Do they want it? That's the first kind of sale we have to make. And so the first book, Product-Led Growth, that was that. That was like, hey, learn about it. Some of the questions you asked me, like, hey, how do you understand if it's right for you? Like, the book covers all of that. And then the next book, or like the next sale we have to make, is like, so if we're bought into PLG, what is the best approach that we need to make? And what does that look like? And do we resonate with that? And so this next book, part of the playbook, is like, hey, here's our system. This is what we've helped, you know, 400 plus companies go through. And we found it's insanely helpful to have a roadmap to go through this. And you can be our own judge. Read it, see if you like it, self-implement it if you want. But this is what we're hoping you're going to align on and say, yeah, this approach is great. We want to do this if we want to build a product-led business. So that's the second sale. The third one eventually is like, what is the best way to do this and to implement this approach? And that's really where it's like, hey, we are hoping, fingers crossed, this book will eventually be our own little PLG case study, where it's like, because the book converts, you know, people like the approach, then they'll eventually want to work with us to implement it. And so that's really the kind of lay of the land as far as like those three approaches. And so kind of like what you were talking about with your podcast tool as well, it's like the first sale might just be like, should you do podcasting? You know, why is podcasting the best approach? And like sale two is like, you know, what's the best approach? You know, all the other tools out there, they don't give you good at analytics. You're missing some core things. Our approach is different because X, Y, and Z. And this is why it's the best. And third sale is like, we just so happen to have the tool that does all that. It's like, brilliant. Okay. So I think breaking down those three sales is, you have to have that. And what we were finding before this book was, we were just trying to jump from one to three. And we were trying to make this jump from like, oh, you like PLG, work with us. It's a pretty big jump, and people got to be committed to you. And when you fix that second piece, the approach, what actually ends up happening is you become uncopyable, because people are bought into your approach and they like your approach. And that's why I was like, one of our clients was in the course creation software space at a really big company. And I kept going back to the CEO. I was like, what's unique? Why should people do this? I mean, people create on-demand courses. We all know the stats. There's the mavens out of the world that say cohort-based learning is the best. There's the circles of the world that say community is the best. And it's like, we got to have an opinion. The world of SaaS and everything is way too commoditized. Hold an opinion. Not everybody has to agree with it, but some will. And that's how you get people committed to what you do beyond just your product.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, kind of behind the curtain with us a little bit, like we're podcast hosting, we're pretty commoditized. We probably have 15 or 20 competitors that do literally the exact same thing. Like we have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. We have an integration with WordPress, which as of today is like a big old pile of who knows what. But I mean, literally for the interesting thing is for probably 80% of our customers, our tool does the exact same thing as fucking Buzzsprout and Captivate and Transistor and all these things. Like you just want to publish your podcast, get a little bit of data on who it is and it be reliable. You know, this is one of the things I think about a lot, and maybe you have a perspective on this, is I think there are transparent and opaque products, right? Like ours should be very transparent. Like you don't want to be in our product a lot. You know, you want to go on Tuesday and publish your episode, and maybe next week you'll get analytics or something. But like HubSpot, right? You want to be in HubSpot all the time. And I think that, like, whatever, that's just a differentiation. I don't know if that plays into PLG for you, but
No, it is. And like part of the research we were doing too is like we put companies into like four buckets. And like what we realized is like most of the market is just in the commodity zone. That's where it's like hard to compete. People are just like buying basically on price. Then there's like the next rung up is you are actually a contender. And in order to do that, you got to complete like phase one, which is like build a foundation, have a strategy or something like that. That's actually unique, different. And that strategy could literally just be the difference between, like, I was thinking about this on the before this podcast. I was like, man, every like podcast I've done for the last little bit has been on Riverside. They're really kicking butt. But like the big difference between like being on this call versus like a Zoom call, you know what it is? It's really just the ideal user is different. This is just targeting like podcasters, and now they do a bit of other stuff, but like it started with podcasters. And it's like the kind of same tech-ish, but they have a couple little things that are really specific to what the podcaster needs. And so now they just create this like incredible opportunity, incredible business, all that stuff. And so strategy could literally just be that easy to become a contender. But then there's like contenders, next level is you become on the cusp of your market. In order to do that, that's where you need to unlock self-serve customers, build leverage into your business. So you can eventually you can move to the final stage, which is become the obvious choice, where it's like you actually just can have this exponential scale in your business because you've actually got most of the market on that stage. So yeah, that's hopefully kind of helpful as you're thinking about like the four stages of the market too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think the thing I was getting at, and I know is taking it the very long way, is differentiation and having an opinion and a hypothesis and trying intentionally to stand out and you know, in a lot of cases say no to a whole bunch of people by your messaging and your positioning, but saying very much yes to some people. And, you know, frankly, we're 8 years in and we're just kind of going through that right now because we've largely played on like, hey, we just do a great job and blah, 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 blah. And we, you know, have grown to like a level and that's fine. But I think what we are realizing is, you know, folks coming to me and they're like, hey, why Castos? I want to be able to say, cause we fucking rock like video podcasting.
Yeah.
Or whatever that thing is. And then it's so clear. And then 10 or 20% of the market just goes like a magnet towards you. So that's a tough thing to see. I actually have a friend who runs a service to get like feedback from users. And for a long time, they were, you know, general, right? Anybody can use it. And they just pivoted to only catering to video game companies.
Yeah.
And they're similar. They're like 7 or 8 years. And so Steve was like, you know, we're going to make this pivot and this is a really big deal, but they had done the research. They knew that this was like the best cohort of customer types for them. And so like that's amazing to see that you see that often, like early in the life standards business, but to see it 7 or 8 years in is a pretty big deal. So.
Well, I mean, I could echo that too. Like at ProductBend, I would say like the first like 5, 6 years of business, we didn't really have like very intentional strategy on that end. Like we were targeting, we thought like, okay, senior product execs, but when you run the data, it was like, oh, it's the founders that are more successful. So once you learn that unique insight, it's like, well, why do you think we target and serve SaaS founders? It's because it's like, okay, we know this part of the market best. We can help them the best. And now we just got to align everything we do to serve them the best. And so if you want, we could kind of workshop on the strategy side of things, which might help other listeners to go through, like, how do you actually build a winning strategy that could make your business kind of stand out as like a contender, like move out of that like commodity land? Would that be something you want to do?
Yeah, that'd be great. I hate to be selfish, but yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. And we can like apply it to what you do as well. So there's like five questions you got to go through and ask yourself. So the first one is like, which market could you become the obvious choice in and like absolutely dominate? So just like getting super clear on what does that look like? And as an example for us at Product Lab, we decided, okay, we're going to be the obvious choice for B2B SaaS founders who want to build and scale a product of a business. So it's like, it's not a crazy one-liner, but it has to feel like something where you're like, okay, we could potentially do that on that end. And so what would you say that is for you?
Yeah, I think I'll use the example I used before, which is it is one of our contenders internally right now is Castos is the obvious choice for podcasters who for video podcasters who want to thrive on YouTube.
Interesting. You see, that is already way more specific where it's like, oh, video podcasters.
Yeah.
Interesting. And like, tell me more because like, oh, you're not just one of those normal podcasters that just do audio. Like it's so much wasted potential. That also leads into your approach too, which is really fun. So I love that. Now the next question is like, where do we play? And the problem with a lot of companies is they're like, oh yeah, we like serve a lot of different people, all kinds of podcasters. But like you would actually say no to other people where it's like, hey, yeah, I know you could use Castor for like a lot of these other things, but here's where we work best. We work best with the video podcaster. And this is why. So you'd pick that as like your ideal customer. The channels you might choose to kind of market to them might actually be YouTube. As an example, like they're already on YouTube. So we're going to use YouTube to market them because that's where they are. And so that's kind of the where to play part. But then the next part is like, how are we going to win? So I love picking like at least 2 to 3 modes where I'm like, oh, this is going to make us like really hard to copy. So it could be just differentiating like on some features. It could be, which in your case, I think that would make sense. Like here's all the video podcast specific features that you care about, just like Riverside with podcasters, like, oh yeah, you got good quality audio, all that fun stuff. But then think about like, what are those other things? Can you think of like any other specific ways that might help you win? It could be pricing. It could be like a super generous free mode. Could be something else. What would stand out to you?
I think just generally like features and like technical stuff is not a great mode because it's relatively easy to beat. I think what it probably means for us is we want to be kind of the epicenter of their content. And so we are that place where all of their content happens, and then it gets distributed to other places from there. But I think that's it. I mean, that comes back ultimately to product and technical things, but it's more of a mindset thing of like, all of my shit is here, you know, like if someone uses a platform like Kajabi, like all of their stuff is in Kajabi. Like they can't, they're not going to go layer on ConvertKit and Webflow and all this kind of crap, right? Like it is everything. And so I think that's part of it. And we want to say like, you can create an amazing video podcast and we can do everything for you.
Totally. Okay. So it's the like all-in-one product side of things. And then I would just try and think of like, what are maybe like 2 or 3 like other modes. And in the book, like we cover like the top 15, it could even be something as simple as like your founder brand, like what you're doing on this podcast. Like that's, you just think about it like, wow, Craig has the best podcast ever. I listen to him all the time. And it's like, how does he do that? Our product, duh. You set the standard for video podcasting. And like, that's just those two modes together become unstoppable. And then the next one is like, fourth question is like, what's winning look like? What's that winning picture? We don't have to go like super deep into that one. But the last one is really important, which is just like, what strategic choices must we make to actually go into this and like execute on this strategy? So for your where to play, that might be, you know, we only work with video podcasters for now, or at least we only target them. If other people sign up, we'll take their money. But we're focusing on like delivering features just for these people. And then the other strategic choices might be like, okay, for how we're going to win. What if we're going to do that founder brand moat as an example, we're going to invest majority of our marketing spend in that. And that's really what we're going to level up. And so when you have that strategy and you lock it down, it helps you just move on to become more of that contender, and you actually gain the confidence that, hey, this is going to work. But just having a strategy on its own won't like make or break anything. It's like you gotta have the conviction and then like the commitment to actually follow through on it. And that's the hard part too.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, on the last point, one thing that I really like, and I think it applies to everyone, is well, one, use your product, right? I think that's like the best marketing to show how other people can solve the problem that they have. And I think Ahrefs does like the best example of this with their content, especially their YouTube content, is how do I do X with Ahrefs? How do I do keyword research? How do I do competitive analysis? And so I think that like in terms of what that looks like for us is, yeah, probably like doing really great at video podcasting and being a mini kind of Jay Klaus or, you know, someone who just really, really dominates. That would be a very defensible mode, because
and other it could people be could sponsoring other people too, that like, sure. Hey, listen, we'll like the top podcasters or something, we'll transform your audio podcast into a video podcast.
Yeah.
And you could like make this a whole new revenue stream or something like that. And those people are like raving fans. And they're like, because when I think of Riverside, what actually started that kind of viral growth loop, in my opinion, I don't know, but it's like everybody who knew what they were doing with podcasting has kind of started to use them.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. And they're like, I guess I'll use them too.
I was on a podcast and so they were Riverside exactly. And it was fine. I guess I'll use it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to answer the question before that of what does winning look like is really specific for us. And it would move average revenue per user up. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, video just more expensive. And so that would be just like the distribution of plans currently, because we see the vast majority of our customers are on our lowest plan, which is a bummer. But it would be that moving over time to our higher plans that support video.
But one thing I'll double take on here too, is in every market, there's one obvious choice. You think of like one Canva, is like one Dropbox, maybe that one doesn't even count anymore because there's Google Drive, all these other things. But like one Miro and stuff like that too, where you're like, okay, what am I going to use for these specific tools? And so like video podcasting setup is like, you're the only one I know, Craig. So it's like, you're already one. And it's like, now if you can get the majority of the market to find that out too, and you become the best, you really become the most recommended solution in your space. And that's where you unlock like this automatic profits, where it's like, oh, what tool are you going to use? I'm just going to use this one. And you get that viral growth loop working for you at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Dude, this is awesome. I really appreciate your time. So the book is out, Product Led Playbook. Folks can find it on Amazon, I assume, if there's a website to go to get it, get you a little more money in your pocket than paying the Amazon people, Bezos.
Yes. So if you do want it on like any format, you can always check out productbed.com/playbook. But we are big on giving away things for free. So if you listen to podcasts like this one, you could also check out Product Led Podcast, and we're going to give it away for free over the next, I think, 12 to 14 weeks. And so
awesome.
You can listen to it there for free too.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Very cool, man. Well, Wes, thanks so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot. I think our audience will have as well. And we really appreciate it. And best of luck with the book launch. I know that's a big deal.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for having me, Greg. This is great.
Yep.